Nikki speaking.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. It's Kirsty.
Hello, Kirsty Rice. How are you? How's the family? Did the Easter Bunny visit you?
Yes, he did. He came to the beach house in Port Wallunga when we were back in Australia for the very first time. We did a little bit of Greek Easter this year too, which was pretty hysterical. I'll tell you about it in the podcast.
So where are you now? Where are all your children?
I'm back in Qatar with all four children under the one roof. It's wonderful. But there's a bit of noise at my house this morning, which could make recording this podcast a little interesting. But do you want to give it a go?
Yes, let's do it. Let's make a podcast.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and welcome back to our new and improved Two Fat Expats podcast, where we talk all things expat, whether it's screwing up our expat children, finding the best locations to live, or not blowing our expat dough. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm great. I think we're just going to get straight into it today because we've had a little break, and we're going to talk about geographical challenges. But I'm guessing you're pretty much challenge-less this week, Kirsty, with all your family under one roof.
I am. I am challenged-less because everybody's here and it all feels good and right with the world, as it does when you have everybody sort of together. But I tell you, my one geographical challenge before we get started is it took me a gazillion years to find the bloody headphones and microphone and everything that I usually use to do this podcast because, you know, last week I was back in Australia and I've now got to the stage where I've learnt to keep a microphone there and headphones so that I don't have to keep carrying it back and forth. But, yeah, I've just had that moment of which cupboard do I keep it in? No, not this cupboard. Okay, downstairs. No, not that cupboard. No, or is it in the spare room? No, not there. Do you know that constant thing between two houses where you can't remember, you know, do we keep that butter knife at this house or do we keep it at that house? Do you know, that's my only geographical challenge, which is a good challenge to have, I guess, because it means you're lucky enough to move between what feels like two homes. But yes. Anyway, Nikki, tell me about your geographical challenge this week.
Well, I don't have one, but I've been thinking a lot about those people who are going to be moving over the Northern Hemisphere summer, which is obviously one of the busiest moving times of the year. So usually people know they're moving, they're negotiating contracts, doing visits, etc., thinking. But it's usually after Easter that people sort of go through the announcing officially, you know, letting their friends and family know and telling social media. I've started to see a few announcements and it just made me think about, you know, it's the time that you start disengaging from your current location and you mentally have to start preparing for your new one.
Yes.
Which is, I don't know, do you remember doing that? It just, when I was saw someone announce they were moving, it was so clear, a memory just came back so clearly to me of I was sitting in Atlanta in my bestie's kitchen and there was like a group of girls and we were just chatting and sort of, I don't remember what we were doing, drinking wine, but just was nothing special, just casual. And I was on my phone. I was giggling about something. I was reading replies to a post in a parents group in Hamburg that I put about doctors and, you know, bits and bobs. And I snorted at one of the answers because obviously, you know, cultural differences, et cetera, et cetera. And someone said, oh, what are you reading? What are you doing? And I told them and it just killed the conversation.
Yes.
Because no one wanted to, I was leaving. No one wanted to talk about that. And no. I was kind of part of me mentally trying to move on. Yeah. And I was sitting in the kitchen with my friends listening and chatting with them, but I was pulling a little bit away. And it was just, it's just such a clear memory to me of really, a really, you know, it's a tricky time for people coming up.
Yeah. And even, you know, when it's your bestie and your bestie's moving and you're all caught up in the sadness of goodbyes and whatever, and you can feel that they're trying not to look too overexcited about their new destination, do you know, or not to talk too much about it. It's a hard one. And then the other side of that too is once you've announced, that you've gone, you're not really going to meet a lot of new people because they're not attracted to you in any way. Like we went out for a birthday brunch on Saturday, G and I, and it was a fantastic brunch for meeting new people. But I met this woman. I really, really liked her, but she was leaving. And so while we had this great sort of catch up and whatever, I didn't do any of the usual, hey, let's connect on Facebook or exchange telephone numbers or do anything, because it's kind of like, yeah, nah, you'll be gone in the next 2 months. It's kind of, you know, without, you know, it sounds so harsh, but you're like, I don't know if that's how I want to invest my time.
Yes. No, I totally get it. I totally get it. It's just such a tricky sort of, and I guess the more you do it, the more you understand the process, but I don't think it necessarily gets any easier, the emotional side of it.
Yeah.
So the actual physical side and the lists and the understanding what you need to do and the steps, et cetera, that obviously can become, if you're more organized, can become a little bit better. But the emotional disengagement and re-engagement and, you know, the worrying, I saw a post this morning on Facebook in our Two Fat Expats Facebook group about children's farewells coming up and yes. her farewell coming up. And was it okay for her children to see her crying? Yes. And I think someone gave a great answer to that.
What did they say?
They said, it's okay. Tears are okay, but not fear. So children will feel the fear. So you can cry because you love your friends and you're leaving them and that's hard,
yeah.
but don't show that you're afraid of what's coming next.
Yeah, that's
so
good advice.
The uncertainty, children can feel uncertainty, which is totally true. Yeah. So I thought it was a great answer, just really insightful that sure, children should see that you're emotional and, you know, you love your friends, but don't be afraid sort of thing. Oh, I thought it was very good.
Oh, look, I think, look, it's a really tough one because I think that also depends on so much on the age of your children, because I would think on a personal note, if it was my teenage children, I would be more inclined to do the tears to show, hey, it's okay to be really, really sad about this. But maybe little tiny children, I would try not to be too sad because, do you know, like, I just remember as a little tiny person how upsetting it is to see your parents cry. Can you remember that, how you felt when you ever saw your parents cry?
Yes, I can remember. And it is, it puts uncertainty inside you.
Yes.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But then when your parents said to you, oh, it's happy tears, or, you know, like, you,
yes, yeah.
If they saw you're upset, they could tell you. But when they were sad tears, then obviously they couldn't tell you that.
Yeah.
They couldn't lie.
When I left Canada, and Canada up until here was the longest time we'd been anywhere, and we were there for just over 4 years. So I arrived in Canada just to set the scene with a, what am I thinking? I'm thinking we must have been four, two and one. Yes. Or under one. So, yeah, so maybe three, one and under. I don't know, but we had three under four, let's just say that. And then I had another baby when I was there. We were there for 4 years. So what that meant was I had done all of that, you know, that real bonding mummy time of preschool, kindergarten, you know, those things where those relationships with other parents are so full on because, you know, you're all exhausted and all trying to learn all the tricks and tips along the way. But I had this amazing group of girlfriends who were all at the same school. And so while I've just given this advice of, you know, don't cry too much in front of little people because you're scaring them, I can remember that catatonic sobbing. Like I was, it was the last day of school that did me in. I managed to get through everything else and, you know, the last ballet lesson, the last creche, the last, you know, everything and goodbyes to neighbours and whatever. But on the very last day of school, we were then checking into the hotel that night, I think, and flying out the next day. And that last day of school, as we were kind of packing up all the bags and doing everything, just that ugly, ugly cry, sobbing, can't speak, can't do anything, unconsolable, it would be the word. And just remember people kind of patting me on the shoulder, trying to sort of go, oh, because nobody could say anything to me because I just couldn't get any words out. And, yeah, and there's all four kids there by my side just looking at me.
Looking at you.
But I think one of the great things you can do with that, because I remember we came back to Canada a year later. So I think if you can prove to little kids too of that age that, hey, it's not a definite goodbye forever. It doesn't have to be a goodbye forever. We can see these people again. I think that's one of the best things we ever did, was to go back a year later. While it can be tricky, I wouldn't go back any sooner than a year, because I think you can sort of rip the scab off the sword, you know what I mean? Like, it can be too hard, because people are like, no, I liked living here more, I want to live here. Kind of like when my second daughter came back here from boarding school and it was too soon. But I think if you can leave a break of a year and come back and have a really great, you know, whether it's, we were lucky, we were still in North America, we went to Houston, so it was, we could come back for, you know, a 4-day break, and it was fantastic, and people went to people's birthday parties, and we all went out to dinner, and we went back to our neighbourhood, and it was all healthy and good because we'd all sort of moved on to new things. I think if you can do that, that's a good one as well.
Yes, it is, but sometimes you move to vastly different continents. But the best thing about being living this kind of lifestyle in today's age of social media and the internet, because in the very beginning, like, I think we moved to Hong Kong before Facebook existed, and I think that if we'd moved somewhere before those things happened and moved again, I wouldn't be in contact with nearly as many people as I still am if I had to write them all letters or individual emails or stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think that makes such a difference. You know, you can FaceTime with your friends and you can do all that kind of stuff just every so often. You know, it doesn't have to be all the time, but it just gives you some little bit of connection to keep going.
Are you good at that? Are you good at FaceTiming with old connections and doing that regularly?
No.
See,
I'm a WhatsApper. I'm happy to send a message, and it's so good. Like, I have a friend in South Africa, and she's a dear friend, but she wasn't one of my really closest friends, but she's very good at social media and stuff. So whenever she sees something that she thinks I'll be interested in, she just sends me a link, and then we have like a little bit of a conversation and whatever. Yeah. And I have quite a few friends that I do that with from all sorts of different places and from Australia. So it's not like I'm in regular contact, but I'll see something and it will make me think of a person, and so I'll send them a message based on that.
That's a great tip.
Don't love video, but I do love WhatsApp. I'm
a fan. I need to do more of that. You know, I've often thought maybe one thing that might force me to do a bit more is I'd love to write more letters to people or more notes, and I mean digitally. I don't mean I'm going to get out and handwrite them all, but I think, you know, so often you think, oh, if you just, I think I've said before, my husband is a brilliant letter writer. Like, if he has good service somewhere, he'll always write the manager a note to say, you know, this person was amazing, and he's really good at doing that. I've seen my husband write politicians who he doesn't vote for, but still write them letters saying, hey, I thought it was good that you did this, or it was unfair that these people said that about you. Do you know, like, he's very good at doing that sort of communication. And I think you're right. All it needs to be is a, this reminded me of you, sort of to make someone go, oh, I was being thought of. You know, I'm not forgotten. You know, our relationship is still existing and important, even though we don't see each other every day. I have one girlfriend who I am FaceTime with, and she is, and I think it all depends on how happy people are with being seen, because she's one of those people that will take you to the toilet with her and take you everywhere and has no qualms about it. You know, you walk with her glass of wine into the toilet. She sits down on the toilet. She keeps talking to you. You then go on into another room. You know, you might do all sorts of things together while you're on the phone together. But I'm not. Like, I'm with you. I'm always, if I have to Skype with anyone or Zoom or do any of those things with people, I always want the video off. I find it far easier without the visual.
Yeah, me too. I agree with you. So, yeah, so that's just a few little tips. But we'd love to hear from anyone that's moving or getting ready to move.
Yes, what a great idea.
Kirsty, how can they let us know?
Okay, so if you go to the twofatexpats.com website, you'll see a little microphone, and you can click on that microphone and leave us a message. We love those messages. You'll quite often hear that we play them in our our podcast as well to sort of give people that community feel of who's out there and what we're all doing and what we're all up to. So please come and click on the microphone. Tell us if you're moving. Tell us how you're feeling about it. I'd like to know too, when you thought the right time was to spring the news. Like, do you tell people 4 weeks before you're leaving, or do you tell them 6 months before you're leaving? Or if you work for one of those lovely big oil service companies, you probably don't get more than 14 days to tell them that you're moving. So I would love to hear those stories too of how you're feeling about your move.
Okay. And Kirsty, do you have any friends moving over the summer?
Not really close friends. I know a lot of people moving over the summer. I have to admit that with my back and forth over the last few months, you know, because this is such a tricky year for us with a child in year 12 and a lot of, you know, building houses and whatever, I've probably, you know, my friend Carol would use, I'm neither your arm nor your elbow. I'm
like that.
Yeah, I'm kind of really within two worlds. So while here I'm in the book group and I see a few people from school and I've got a few, you know, of the kids' friends, like all that seems fairly tight. Nobody's moving from there. But I don't feel I'm as entrenched. I know I will be again next year, but I've just had to kind of consult, you know, tell myself, look, this is just how it is. You're going to be in between two worlds and a little bit disjointed for a while. So, yeah, I don't feel that same impact. And I'm sure what will probably happen, Nikki, is I'll have one of those years where I come back from the summer break and it'll be like, oh, where's Ange? Oh, Ange doesn't live here anymore. Oh, I didn't know that. Do you know, like, I reckon I've probably missed a bit. Have you ever been like that in a location, do you know, where you've kind of just checked out for a while?
Yeah, no, not really. I can't think of a place where that's happened.
Yeah, chemo and radio is a bit like that for me because I just stopped being so social and we just didn't go out and I'd kind of missed a lot of stuff, do you know, and I realised that. I didn't realise until after it was all over. Oh, shivers, you missed that piece of news and that happening and whatever. Yeah, just is what
it
is.
Well, you probably had a few other things to focus on, I think. And this year you've also had other things to focus on. There have been happier things, but there have been other things that you've had to focus on. So
yeah. That's
and
right.
You made the deal with yourself and you're happy. So you're good.
Nikki, what do you want to talk about this week with expat tech?
Well, Kirsty, I don't know about you, but people talk all the time about password apps, like if you use one, if you don't. Now, I have my password stored very secretly in a secret location, cryptically written on a piece of paper with crossings out because I cryptically write them so well that I can't remember what they are. And I'm always having to reset them and, you know, all this sort of stuff. So I've decided it's time to man up because I love tech so much. I don't know why I don't use it and use a password app. So I don't know. So do you use a password app? And if you do, what one is it? And do you put everything in there, like including like your bank accounts and stuff?
Right. So what I do is I am a Mac user. So I do the keychain access. Have you got that, where all your passwords are kept in your keychain?
Oh, yeah, I don't trust it.
Oh, you don't trust it. Okay, so that's what I have been doing up until now.
But I don't base that on anything.
Right.
I don't base that on anything at all.
Okay.
No.
But I have just had a very recent one at work. So we've just had some changes at work and I went to go and log in to a certain, because we use lots and lots of online programs, right, that we can all access because we're all over the world, et cetera. And I went to go into our customer service thing the other day, and because it's not something I'm in every day, I went, oh, password, not sure, how does this work now? And sort of had to go to the head of customer service and say, oh, I don't think I have a password for this anymore. No, we now use Dashlane. So I will put a link into this week's running sheet, which is just at twofatexpats.com. But we are now using something called Dashlane, which is a password manager. And I think it's all about security and it's all about regenerating different passwords all the time. I have not started using it as yet because the person who's in charge of it is actually in Hawaii on holidays until Friday. So on Monday morning, one of my first things to do is to say to her, hey, what's the deal with Dashlane? What do I do? How do I make this work? So, and I gather she'll tell me all about it. So that is one thing that we do for passwords. And then along the same note for protecting my computer, because I've been a Mac user, I kind of have not been in the world of antivirus software for the longest time, right? Because I just haven't needed to. But I have heard lately everyone's talking about Bitdefender and using Bitdefender for sort of virus protection. Have you heard of that at all? And what do you use for that sort of protection?
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got I've got a standard that I bought a few years ago, virus protector, that just I get the message it your credit card has been charged for 12 months use. And then sometimes things pop up and say, you know, your computer thinks you shouldn't open this because it might have a virus. So, yeah, but I don't know about Bitdefender, so I might have to look into that.
And you're a Mac laptop person, aren't you?
I am, yes. Yeah. See, I'm also a Mac.
I was sort of always under the impression, because when I first changed to Mac, which was a long time ago, right, I think I got my first Mac in about 2007. So, yeah, 10 years. So I can remember then one of the most joyous things about getting a Mac was you didn't have to keep doing the bloody antivirus software, do you know, like that it was just always you just update through Mac and it was all safe and good. But I did notice with Bitdefender that it says that it's for Mac users as well. So, I mean, they must think that you need to have it, but it's something I really need to investigate more.
I think the more here we are, so tech savvy. I think the more that I understand that more viruses and things are written for non-Mac computers.
Yes.
So Windows computers.
Yes.
So that they're just targeted more.
Yes.
But I guess that you can target Macs just as much, but I don't really understand the pros and cons and the ins and outs of that.
Yes.
But so you don't have a password app as in one on your phone or your computer that just store. Like where are your bank passwords? Are they in your keychain?
So how it works with keychain is every time you have to create a password for a particular website, it stores it in your keychain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I do for that.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And then with our bank passwords, they're in the safe. And see, we bank with HSBC, so we have one of those special little cards, which I'm sure there's a lot of people out there groaning out loud going, oh, God, we've got those two. You know, those little things where you've got to get sent the special encryption that comes to you and then you put that in.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Yes. So, well, yes. It's awesome if you both have them. It's very not awesome if you don't. You're being facetious? Okay. Sorry, you need to, like, amp up your sarcasm font on that one. But
I'm sorry. I was thinking, I'm speaking. It's not even font. I didn't make it clear. Sorry.
Look, drives me nuts. And that's one of my things in Don't Blow Your Dough this week that has come up with Greg and I as people who are traveling and expats and banking together, is it's one of the things that holds one person back from getting involved is, you know, if one person's got the encryption codes and the other person doesn't, well, then the other person's completely hooped. But we can talk about that more in Don't Blow Your Dough. I'm guessing we must have a listener out there who is far more tech savvy than us, who can explain to us, best way to store passwords and why. If there's anyone out there who's a real Mac wizard, tell me about whether you think keychain access is safe, because I'm using it and I'm hoping it's safe because I'm using it, but also the Bitdefender thing. And then I promise next week when I come back, I will know more about Dashlane and how I'm using it at work and how it's working. But if you are an expat tech sort of person out there, send us a note and we can either interview you for a few minutes or just leave us a note and explain it to us and put us out of our misery. Okay, Nikki, expat relationships.
Okay, so this is like this makes me feel a little bit goosebumpy. So we had a lovely visit over Easter. from someone who I last knew as an 11-year-old in the playground in Hong Kong in 2009. Oh. And because of social media and everything, we have, since he was a teen, we've been Instagram buddies. And his mother is German and his father's English and they still live in Hong Kong. So now he's 20 and he's living and studying in the UK. And he was visiting his aunt who lives just outside Hamburg as part of his Easter break. And I saw him, he was like bussing across Europe. You know, he stopped in The Hague and he stopped in Amsterdam, and you know, like he had all these photos on his social media, and then he put on the train he was coming. He's like, "Oh, we're coming to visit you, Nicky Moff."
Oh.
It was just very sweet.
Where do his parents live now?
They still live in Hong Kong. They have businesses there, so they're sort of long term. But he was born in Indonesia, and then he moved to Hong Kong as a baby. And then after school, he did a year, had a bit of a gap year in, and he came to Germany and did language school. Now he's at uni in the UK, studying hotel management. And I tell you, if I can raise one of my children to be the kind of human being that he is, I would just be thrilled. He came here and I said, you know, do you want to, he's a student, right? He's probably not got heaps of money. I said, do you want us to take you out to lunch? Because, you know, we'll take you anywhere and hang out. And he said, no, I've seen the photos of your apartment, like on Instagram. I want to come and visit you. I want to see it and everything. So we came. We just had lunch and the kids came and sat with us for maybe half an hour. And I spent 5 hours just chatting to him about everything he's done, all the things he's doing, all his friends, his parents. It was amazing. And I sent his mother an email the next day. I included words like, you know, mature, capable, down to earth, engaging. It's like I was writing like,
oh, wow.
And he is just the best kid. And I just think, gosh, you know, like he's been raised in a similar way to my kids are being raised. And I just hope that eventually, and you know, he had not the easiest teen years, and he talked about that.
Why did he not have the easiest teen years? Explain that to me.
So he, when he was little, he had some problems in school and he had some diagnosis that I'm probably not going to go into, but that impacted his learning and his participation in school. And it also took a while for him to become into his own socially. So he said the last 2 years of his schooling, his whole outlook changed, his whole demeanor changed, his attitude to school changed, and he just really engaged. He became more social. He did all this great stuff. So he really, you know, like it's just such a TCK success story. But also, I mean, he was probably going to be a good kid anyway. Like, okay, I get that. But we continued the relationship. So now, like, we've been in touch online, but now we sort of, we spoke, you know, and that sort of really cements that relationship.
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, when my kids are older and traveling around and visiting other people, I just hope they can act a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought it was great.
And you know what? Like, when people talk about TCKs and this mental anguish of, you know, start, stop, all over, you know, relationships all over, things breaking down, whatever. I think the thing is, in the course of a lifetime, everybody will have their moments of self-doubt or, you know, wondering whether they made the right decisions or how their relationships work or whatever. That's life, right? So you could grow up in the same town with the same people and have this really concrete, hard family environment around you with great support structures, and at 40 could have the biggest breakdown about what have I done with my life? Do you know, I haven't traveled. I don't know enough different people. I don't know whatever. Things will happen. So maybe the thing with TCKs is they are forced to do all this introspection and think about these things at a young age. But then when they're older, they actually grow and develop into these amazing people because they've done all that. Do you know, they've got it out the road. Maybe, I'm not saying that is the case, but maybe it just all happens in a different time. But yes, I think that's a gorgeous story. One for everybody out there who's wondering if they're screwing up their expat child to see that, no, they will be completely capable, and that one of the beautiful things is they end up going to visit the woman who was in the playground when they were 11 years old, and she wasn't a weirdo. She was actually really lovely.
Yeah.
And then meeting her, you know, 11-year-old. So yeah,
I know, because we last met them when they were little kids. Oh. Like he was always a big kid to them, yeah. You know, and he was the king of the kids in the playground. He used to lead all the games, and he was really good with the little kids. So you know, it was just really, really nice. Yeah. Anyway, so what about you? What's going on in your expat relationship world?
Yeah, well, this is going to flow into my expat relationships, and then into screwing up my expat children. So in my expat relationships, we have had some really beautiful news this week. So Helen, who works for us and has worked for us for 7 years, Helen came to work for us when she was about 19, and we have a relationship with Helen, and it's really interesting because I wanted to let people, our family friends, know today Helen's news, but it's interesting how we talk about people that work for us within our homes, right? Helen is our housekeeper, and we think of her very much as our housekeeper in that she keeps the day-to-day running of the house going, in that I can go back and forth and she is the one stable person that's here. She does our cooking sort of Monday to Friday or Sunday to Thursday, as it would be in the Middle East, and Helen sits down for dinner with us every night at the table, and we talk and discuss life and her life and our life and stories and jokes and whatever. I think one of the happiest moments of my life was when Helen actually told her first joke at the table, because she couldn't speak English when she first came to work for us. She spoke very minimal English, and then she did lots and lots of classes, and then so to be able to tell a joke in English, I think that was just the hugest thing. It was very funny and a very good moment. But anyway, so Helen, my little guy, was, I guess, 3 when she came, and he's now 11. And so Helen told us she had an announcement, and Helen is married to a lovely guy who also helps us out because he's an Uber driver. So when I'm not here and we've got someone to get to rugby and someone to get to baseball and then someone to get to, you know, the clarinet lesson, Asha will jump in to help out with his Uber driving expertise. But, yes, she said she had an announcement to make, and at dinner, and, of course, all of us are here under the same roof, so it was particularly special that we're all here, and she told us that she was pregnant. And
oh, I've got goosebumps. She was saying that.
It was huge. It was, I think, one of our biggest family moments, in that we're all here and everybody just squealed and clapped and cheered, and just watching your children be so genuinely happy for someone. Like, they were all just so, so happy for her, because, you know, we've wondered, and, you know, oh, I wonder if Helen will ever have a baby, or have we put Helen off having babies? Will she never have babies because of us? But, you know, she has often said, oh, I'd like to have 4 children as well. And, you know, I guess what I was trying to say before is it's very hard to speak to your friends at home about having a housekeeper or having help within the home, because it's easy to jump into those cliches of, you know, she's a member of our family or blah, blah, blah. And then people go, yeah, well, how many members of your family do you pay a weekly wage to? Do you know, that's not all there. It's not equal playing field, you know, and especially in a world where you have someone's work visa, you know, it's up to you to keep, you know, providing their work visa. You know, there's a level of control there that's not normal in other parts of the world. But so I tend to not speak to people at home about Helen, because people don't get it. They don't understand the depth of the relationship, because they can only see someone that's washing and ironing and mopping and cleaning. What they don't see is the times where you're standing in the kitchen bearing your soul, do you know? And they don't see that you had breast cancer, and while your hair was dropping out all over the house, it was her that was picking it all up but not talking about it, or her knowing that you'd been violently ill that morning from chemo, but you were putting on a brave face for your children and keeping the secret safe. Do you know, and she has just been such a huge part of our life. I'm going to get emotional, but she is such a huge part of our life. So, yes, it was a big, 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 big deal for us. But, of course, that then moves us into the, you know, well, what happens next for your family and your kids? And I'm looking at my little guy at the moment thinking, yep, this is all great news and wonderful, but you're very selfishly thinking, oh, how's he going to go with this? Because he's so excited. And one of the things I shared with my family and friends this morning is I walked into the kitchen and I heard him say to her, when you said that you had an announcement, I was praying that you were going to say you were pregnant, because you're just going to be the best mum, you know, because you're just so good at it, Helen. You're going to be, your baby's so lucky because you're going to be the best mum. And, of course, your heart's aching because you think, you beautiful soul, that you've said this. But I don't know if he's quite conned on that kind of means that she's maybe not going to be around to help him out in what he's used to. And, you know, I've just watched him now where, you know, his two big sisters have gone off to school. His big brother will eventually go off to school. We have an aging beagle that I'm terrified is going to die. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, what am I going to do to my kids now? Like, and it's, you know, that whole thing of change. It's like, can everything just stand still for a while, please? But it doesn't. Life doesn't stand still. It just keeps going on. So, yeah, that's me and my expat relationships and my expat kids. Have you got how you're screwing up your expat kids story, Nikki?
Oh, well, I've always got a story. I'm always screwing them up. I mightn't always share the stories, though. I had some conversations over the Easter holidays with my son about my 15-year-old about pornography.
Oh.
Not because anything came up, yeah, but just because I was listening to a parenting. But just because I was listening to a parenting podcast that I've talked about before on here, Tilt Parenting, and I'll put the link in, about pornography and the impact that it's having on today's teens. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, you can read a lot, listen to a lot about that. But there was just some very specific advice and information that was really, was broken down and easy for parents and kids to listen to. So after I listened once, I made my son listen to it with me together. Mm-hmm. So we had a moment where he wouldn't look at my eyes, but he was sort of sitting in the room listening.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the whole thing. It was like 6 to 8 minutes or whatever of what I thought were the sort of key points.
I'm just envisaging him sharing this story with his friends.
My mum is making me. But you know what? I tell you, it was just, to me, it was just the same as watching the movie Screen Ages with him.
Right.
So the movie Screen Ages, of course, is about, you know, addiction to social media, or not social media, but the internet and gaming and all that kind of stuff. And this was the same thing. This was just about how teens, like this woman said, you know, you're better off having, you know, a magazine, because a magazine is something, you know, which is something that, you know, our generation of people did more than the looking and the just the vast array of online access and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I thought it was good, and he was fine. Like, yes, you're right. He didn't enjoy it, but he was fine about it because we try and talk about all these things a lot openly in our house, as I'm sure most people do. And I know a lot of the kids at his school watch porn, boys and girls. He's discussed it with me that he's asked them about it because, you know, he and I have had conversations about that. So I just wondered, though, I was sitting there wondering if I was going to would be having the same conversation if we're in America or if we're in Hong Kong. Or because I just think it, stages. I mean, I know he's 15, so yes, it's more than time, and it's not the first conversation we've had. But I feel like in America, I don't know that we would have the same conversation.
Oh,
or I mean, in Hong Kong, we might have had it much earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I'm just this particular one. I'm not sure. I just think with different things, there are different conversations you have at different times.
Yeah, I agree.
In different, depending on the culture.
Look, I was horrified that I had to have that conversation with my girls, because what had happened to me, similar thing, I guess, got educated from watching. I think the first thing I sort of watched about porn with teenagers was a TED Talk, and it was the woman who, and I'll try and dig it out for you, but it was the woman who had, she started the porn site where it uses real people having sex, not actors.
Oh, okay.
And the reason she started it was it's, you know, there's been all this study and it's been proven that, you know, all these kids are watching this porn and it's not real sex, you know, and it's, and sorry for anyone that's got kids in the car, I would definitely, turn us off now and let's leave us for a time when you're on your own. The thing that horrified me was they showed how much anal sex there was, or misinformation about, you know, how many girls, sorry, I'm getting really graphic, but, you know, girls that squirted, they, you know, that boys thought that that was normal, you know, all these things that happen in porn that don't necessarily happen in real life when you look at the statistics, and how they make it look like girls love doing this stuff, you know. And the reason she had started this site for, you know, real-life couples having sex and being able to sell their videos and whatever was because she wanted more people to see real sex than nasty porn sex. And the statistics that were really frightening for me for young boys was that they would start off maybe with soft porn, but then, you know, there is proof that the more that you watch it, watch this stuff, the less effect it has. And so they're getting to,
yeah,
it gets more graphic, more visual, more close up, more hardcore, until they're completely desensitized. And what they were saying was happening to these young boys is that then when they actually end up with a woman, they can't perform. Because it's just,
that's what this,
yeah, is that what they were saying in Tilt? So yeah, so I sort of watched and learned a lot of stuff like that, you know, a few, I guess, you know, because it makes sense, Nikki, that your guy's 15. That was about 3 years ago for me when my daughter was 15, right? So she turns 18 next month.
Yeah.
But what I was annoyed about was because, you know, once you're armed with this information and you learn about it and you read the statistics, you're like, well, I need to talk to my child. Do you know, I can't pretend that this isn't happening and just la, la, la. But I remember sitting there with her and she would have been, you know, 14, 15. I knew that she hadn't had a relationship of any kind, you know, even kissed someone at that stage, that I was like, I can't believe I'm having to have this conversation with you, but I want you to know that if a boy ever put you in a situation where he was telling you that that was normal and that you should enjoy that, or that that everybody was doing that, I want you to know, no, that's wrong. But I think, Nikki, I'm guessing even if you were living in America, you would have had that conversation, because you still would have listened to Tilt and you'd still be having conversations with other liberal thinking parents. And
yeah,
I think for me what has happened is I have become highly cynical about our kids being educated about this. And I'm so pleased to hear that you're talking to your son, because I know that lots of people do not talk to their sons about it. And, you know, we've had an environment recently where my daughters are at an all-girls school. They went to an all-boys school for an information day where they were told a lot of that information. And the whole idea of the day was that boys would have healthy relationships with women, because they would sit and be told this information and the girls would be there and they would all discuss these things together. But still, every weekend at parties around the world, we see girls being videotaped, and you know, that there's alcohol and drugs involved and people aren't often willing participants. And I have seen that firsthand with my precious children or around their friends, where things have got underhand, where, you know, kids that should have known better about respect and people's wishes, because, you know, maybe because they were drunk or maybe just because they are those sort of people, you know, took advantage of people. So, yeah, I think it's our job, right, to keep our kids really informed. So go you. Well done, even as awkward as it was.
But the other thing that I'm really, well, it's not awkward for me. As I say, it's my job to embarrass my children. I tell them no all the time. But the other thing was that brought up in the podcast was that, you know, she interviewed someone who is an expert in talking to children and adults about this sort of family counselling, just about pornography and or sex. And one of the things was that there was a seven-year-old girl that looked up, that Googled horses.
Oh.
And she had to do a project for school. She Googled horses. And then all of a sudden, her parents said she came back later and she'd been gone for like 4 hours researching, but she'd been watching porn for 4 hours. And as a seven-year-old, she couldn't really, like, that wasn't a deliberate act on her part. That was like she Googled horses and then went down this rabbit hole that ended up in porn. And actually the podcast was quite funny because the parents said to the therapist, well, you know, like it wasn't too bad. It was like 70s porn. So it's, you know, it was old fashioned. It was more like real sex. But the thing is that, and the other thing, so this is another thing and it's a parenting moment. I think I can share it. When we gave our son his phone, he was, I don't know, 12 or 13, and we made him sign a contract and the contract said no porn on the phone. And I was discussing this with my sister-in-law at Christmas in Bali when he was 14. And she said to me, we were talking about porn and whatever. And I said, you know, it says in the contract. She said, you know what? He's 14 and he's a boy. And if you really think he's not looking at porn on his phone, you really got to wake up to yourself. Yeah. I said, what? What are you talking about? Because we talk about with our children about everything, like quite openly.
Yes.
And I was just like, oh my God. And so I went then and there on her advice, like just I'd had this conversation. I thought, oh my God, Nikki, you're an idiot. I went and talked to him and I said, dude, you know, like I've just been thinking and I've been having this conversation and this is what I'm thinking. He said, Mum, Pornhub is banned in Indonesia. And I said, okay. I said, okay. We'll talk more about this later. But it was really an eye-opening event for me. And I think as myself as quite, you know, open-minded and we discuss a lot of things with our children yes. all the time. But I was thinking, oh, well, he's just yes. sticking to the rules.
Yeah.
But no, he wasn't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, look, and it's the weirdest thing with your little boys as well because, you know, it's like when you have these tiny little children and I remember traipsing around the world with my tiny little children and people talked about teenagers and attitudes of teenagers and eye rolling and how people just stopped talking one day and you're like, you're looking at your little people and you're thinking, well, that will never happen with my little people because my little people are just so beautiful and loving and cuddly and sweet and gorgeous and I can never imagine that. And now I'm living in a house full of teens where at any time one of them may just turn on me and point out everything that is wrong with me that day, do you know? And you suddenly, you know, I have yeah. a 14-year-old son now and the difference between having an 11-year-old son and a 14-year-old son is so drastic. Like it's so drastic. You know, my 11-year-old would still come in and crawl into bed with me some nights if he felt like it. And, you know, whereas my 14-year-old, I think that would almost be punishment to say you must come and sleep with me.
Okay, so I think we've well and truly bared our soul on how we're ruining our screwing up our expat kids.
Yes. Yes, we have. Now, expat money. Don't blow your dough. So first episode got some really, really lovely positive responses to, and you know, of course, once again, overshared and bared my soul on expat money. But I guess
wow, we can really chat, can't we? When's it ever going to end? You might be thinking. Well, the answer is just about now. We decided this week because we had so much to chat about and to catch up on because we missed a week and so many interesting things to discuss that we're going to split this week's episode into two. So what you've just listened to is part one and then part two will kick off and start the expat money section again, then go into location, 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 and then all our books, TV, movies, podcasts, etc. after that, as per usual. So don't worry, all those things are coming, but they're just coming in another episode. So thanks for listening to part one and bye for just a little while.